Welcome into episode 81. Wow, 81 of Kicking It with Danny and Donnie. Disclaimer, I cannot find my microphone right now, so I may sound a little muffled. It's also 7:45 in the morning, so I may sound like death, but we're here regardless. Danny, how has life been for you in the last 2 weeks? It's been a while since the last pod, but the dust had to settle after the Bucks got their crown.
It's been good, man. It's been good. I'm sure the last few weeks for you as a Bucks fan have been celebratory and relaxing. And you know what? Hopefully you've taken it all in. It's been well earned. It's been in the waiting. Those pictures of Giannis and his brothers with the trophies. They're really basking in it as they should. Like, I'm never going to say that they shouldn't. The problem is, right, with this season being all backed up and short and the quick off season, is we barely had time to celebrate them. I mean, we had time to celebrate them for like a week, and now all of a sudden it's who's drafting who. Free agency starts soon. Who's picking up who? And here we are, a few weeks removed. Took a little bit of a break, had a little bit of a hiatus, which was nice. You know, we got to enjoy some time. But now we're back. NBA is back. As soon as the draft happens, free agency happens, it seems like the season's around the corner. So I'm already excited. Been a good few weeks for me, but I'm ready to talk about the moves because there have been a lot of moves, a lot of pickups. There's going to be a lot of change in the next NBA season. And I'm interested to know if you think the Bucks are favorites to back-to-back this year after some of the moves that have been made. And I'm sure we are not done yet.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about the back-to-back. I think initially, you know, gut reaction, you think, yeah, run it back, of course. The Bucks did, you know, do this because of some injuries that happened. I'll admit that, but that's the name of the game. So they won the finals, goes down on paper, amazing. But we're going to get into it. Like you mentioned, there were some moves that were made that might shift the landscape. But first, the NBA draft happened last week, and it was fantastic to watch. I was loving it. Even though we knew pretty much the first three picks, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, Evan Mobley, it got wild after that. Scotty Barnes went four to Toronto, followed by Jalen Suggs, and then Josh Giddey went six, the Australian from the NBL, to the Thunder. Your boy Jonathan Kuminga went seven to the Warriors. Franz Wagner went eight to the Magic, which was a shocker. Davion Mitchell at nine to the Kings. Zaire Williams, the Pelicans at 10. Here's where it got pretty weird. James Bouknight somehow fell to the Hornets at 11. Now they're overloaded with guards. Joshua Primo from Bama went 12 to the Spurs, which was the biggest head scratcher so far. Chris Duarte, 13 to the Pacers. Moses Moody, 14 to your Warriors. Some other notable picks. Jalen Johnson went 20 to Atlanta. Keon Johnson went 21 to the Knicks. Isaiah Jackson, 22 to the Lakers. Josh Christopher, 24 to the Rockets, pairing up with Jalen Green. I really love Cam Thomas to the Nets at 27. And that's pretty much it in the first round, Danny. What were some of your main takeaways, and who do you think won the first round? I have a feeling I know who you're going to say, and I'll go ahead and say it. I think it was the Warriors. Snagging Kuminga, snagging Moses Moody, two guys that are NBA ready, can contribute right away. Bob Myers continues to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to argue with that just for the sake of us, because, you know, we agree a lot. We argue a lot. In this one, I'll go with another one because it would be very easy for me to say the Warriors. And obviously, I don't want people to listen to this and think, oh, Danny's being biased. Of course, the Warriors won. First of all, Bob Myers has continued to show why he's one of the best in the business. I mean, he knows how to draft. He knows how to find the right guys. And it seems as though guys just kind of fall to us. And I think that's what happened with Moses Moody. I really do think he is one of those players in this draft that, given a few years, could be an all-star. I mean, I really do. I think he fits the system of the game. I think he's developed. I think he's only going to get better in our system. But it's hard for me not to say that the Warriors won, but I'm going to say that I think the Rockets won the first round, because I've been saying for how long Jalen Green is one of my favorite players to watch in all areas of, I mean, looks, you know, for those who can't see, I just had a cat walk across my keyboard, but these are the things that happen when you're recording live. But I think Jalen Green is one of my favorite players across all you know, leagues, levels of basketball. I mean, I think he's going to be an absolute superstar. And for them to get Josh Christopher at 24, I mean, I know I saw a lot of people thinking he could drop. I know I think a lot of people think he's very raw, has a lot of talent that needs to be filled. But to get him with Jalen Green, I mean, that's about as good as it can get. I mean, that's like when you're two buddies, right? You get drafted on the same pickup team in, at school. You know, it's like, oh man, we've been playing together all the time. Like, you're just naturally going to get better. And I think that's what happened. I mean, and obviously they picked up Usman Garuba as well, who I think is a good player, has room to develop. But to get Jalen Green and Josh Christopher, I think that only makes Josh Christopher better. And the reason I'm going to pick them above the Warriors is because, let's be honest, between the Warriors and the Rockets needed a lot more help. And it seemed as though they got a lot of offensive help. They can kind of gut that team now. They've got a few guys, guards, who can play some defense, and they can put guys around them for the future. But obviously the Warriors are more of a win now. So I like what they did in the first round. I love Kuminga, a bit raw. I don't know if you saw him in that first summer league game, man. He's got some explosion, can get to the rack. And Moses Moody has it all. I mean, I think he fits perfect, especially with the situation that the Warriors have right now with Klay. You know, waiting on Klay, you don't want to rush him back. And I think Moody and Klay, I mean, I can't think of a much better combination. I mean, you got a first team, second team style defenders right there who could come in the first and second unit. I mean, I really do think it was great, but I am still going to lean towards the Rockets because they needed much more help and they got it. So I'm going to say the Rockets won the first round.
I was praying, not praying, because it's not really that big of a deal. When I saw Josh Christopher drop, well, not really drop either, because he was projected late first round, early second round. And I saw, obviously, Houston on the clock. I'm like, how cool would that be? You know, to have those two guys, like you mentioned, join each other on the team. And not just, like you said, a pickup team, even college team, the NBA. It's ridiculous. Nothing really happened crazy in the second round. So I will just go ahead and say the draft was great. A lot of guys came in, moved some things around. But you had something to add for that.
So you say the Warriors won the first round in your choice. Would you say the Warriors won the draft in your mind?
I would say it's tough. I think when you look at maybe overall, okay, yeah, you could easily look at, we mentioned the two teams that we think won the first round. They each had multiple first round picks. They have more of a substance, which is fair. Honestly, I think the Magic may have won the draft. And I think overall, I think Jalen Suggs and Franz Wagner, two guys you can easily plug in now and not just have contribute, but Wagner's going to be counted on to maybe make like actual, you know, actual game day contributions, which is, you know, I wouldn't say unheard of, but in a situation like this, it's kind of hard to walk away and not think, okay, these guys are going to be used from day one. Getting Jalen Suggs, falling to him at five. Honestly, I'm glad because Scotty Barnes, I thought, was a shoe-in to go five to the Magic. I thought Suggs was a shoe-in to go four to the Raptors, but apparently Suggs had a terrible workout and it pushed him down to five. The Magic should be lucky because Barnes, the one thing they're going to knock him on naturally, understandably, can't shoot the ball. He can't. And the Magic are full of guys like that. Jonathan Isaac, you know, Mo Bamba, all these guys that Markelle Fultz, can't shoot and are just solid defensively, but okay, yeah, if you hold teams to 75, you got to score 80. So maybe that's exaggerating, but getting a guy in Suggs that can be a playmaker from day one, Franz Wagner, who's only going to get better, so raw as a player, has improved every year at Michigan. I think it's Orlando overall.
No, and I like that. And I think at the end of the day, when you can have two top 10 picks, I mean, you're always a shoe-in to win a draft. Especially having two guys like that who, in my opinion, that's why the era of analytics tends to get a little lost with me sometimes. It's because to say Jalen Suggs should not go number four, like we all kind of looked and said, okay, we know who the top three is and who's the best of the rest. I think it was pretty clear after the college season it was Jalen Suggs. I mean, a guy who can hit that type of shot in the semifinals of the NCAA tournament to lead his team to the final. I mean, clearly that guy can handle the pressure. Clearly that guy knows his game, is confident in himself. And to think like, oh, we had one bad workout, so that means we're going to pick up this guy who, let's be honest, Scotty Barnes since high school, people have been like, is he going to be top three? Is he going to be late first round? Is he going to learn how to shoot? Is he going to be the next Ben Simmons? Like, and I don't think them getting Ben Simmons, quote unquote, right? If he ends up being that at number four is a problem. I mean, like, I think as much as the haters on Twitter will tell you otherwise, being able to pick up Ben Simmons at number four in a draft would be a steal, right? So if he turns into that, he can defend his butt off. He just needs to put in that work. But I mean, he's that guy you want on your team, right? I mean, that's the guy where, you know, like you said, there's a lot of guys who can't shoot. There's a lot of guys who are raw. They've picked up a few guys in the offseason who aren't going to freaking, you know, blow your hair back. So Scottie Barnes is going to need to be his complete self. Funny enough, you say the Magic. I think you're going to be surprised at my answer. But hey, listen, I'm one of those guys. I do my due diligence as much as I can, and I've got conviction. And one of the guys I told you, and we both said, I'm not going to say I told you, like, you know, you didn't know, who we both thought should have gone much higher is Jalen Johnson. So Jalen Johnson dropping to 20 to Atlanta is the steal of the first round. I think both of us, I mean, it's probably between him and Book Knight dropping to 11. But Jalen Johnson was one of those guys where me and you talked after last season. We're like, Jalen Johnson could go to the Warriors at 7. He could go to the Warriors at 14. He could easily go anywhere in the top 10. And he drops to 20. So can we agree that that's the steal of the first round?
I would say so. I would say right. So. I think that one, yeah. I kept seeing his name fall, and I'm like, okay, you know, I get that it was limited at Duke. I get that there were some problems there, but now it almost makes you wonder, though, not to piggyback off of you, but honestly, what do you do with Cam Reddish? What happens now? I mean, apparently they're shopping him, which makes no sense after what he did in the playoffs, but does Jalen Johnson now absorb some of those minutes? Like, what happens?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure. And I think you can't have too many shooters. Like, that's the thing is I just don't see why. Like, I get it why they have to shop him out. I get it why you can't have too many of those guys on the roster. But, I mean, I think them picking up Jalen Johnson, you know, like you said, it basically says, okay, you know, maybe we're over Cam Reddish. We can get him out, maybe get a pick later on. But real quick to get back, you know, I think we can both agree Jalen Johnson maybe is the steal of the first round, if not the number one. He's at least in the top three for steals in the first round. And you're going to laugh at me, but I said this to you countless times throughout the draft. Whoever picks up Sharif Cooper is getting a steal, because this is a guy I watched literally his last 2 years of high school, his year at Auburn, which was, you know, barely even a season considering he was not even eligible for the first, I think, 6 or 7 games of the season. Came in, he had a growth spurt. I mean, this dude has some of the best vision across college basketball last year, and I think he played maybe 10 games, 10 to 12 games. And he drops to his hometown team in Atlanta to play under maybe the biggest rising star point guard in the league right now, Trae Young. I don't think there could have been a better fit for any team right now today across all 60 picks than that one. Sharif Cooper gets to stay at home. That takes the pressure off. Knows he's not coming in a role where he has to contribute that much because he's got Trae Young. And obviously, as we just mentioned, a lot of 3-and-D wing guys. He's not going to need to play an extreme amount of minutes. But if he needs to, he can. And that's a guy he can learn under. That's a guy who's going to pull him under his wing. I truly do think the Hawks had the steal of the first and the second round. And for that reason, I think they won the draft, not because of, you know, the amount of players that they got that are going to immediately contribute, which is what typically people would use as their criteria for who wins the draft. But to get the steal of the first round and the steal of the second round for me means a lot more than picking, you know, the best player available at 30, right? Like, those, I think, for me were steal picks. I think Atlanta, truthfully, especially after what they did this past season, it's not like they needed to make an incredible amount of moves, right? I mean, they just needed to make a few moves. You know, we'll get into the moves that they made in free agency as well. But I think as of right now, the Hawks had the two steals. They've got a lineup that's ready to push for an Eastern Conference championship right now. I really do think the Hawks won the draft day. And, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll be talking about this and Sharif Cooper and Jalen Johnson come playoff time next year because they're going to need some extra help. But I got the Hawks winning the draft. As strange as that may sound to the casual listener, I got the Hawks winning the draft.
Well, I know you were excited when you texted me about the Sharif Cooper pick. And, you know, of course, like you mentioned with Jalen Johnson, I'm going to go ahead and pivot here. You know, we touched on the draft. And as NBA fans know, free agency is probably considered, not probably, it is a holiday in the NBA. Right when that 6th Eastern opening strikes, so many deals happen, so much changes. And for that, I'm going to say, well, one, go off what you mentioned. We talked about steals in the first round. I thought a steal in the second round came in the Windy City. Ayo Dosunmu from Illinois going 38
was a steal. I am shocked he did not go into the first round. They get him there, solid NBA-ready type body, maybe not exactly player, but no rush because Zach LaVine's already got that spot. And now, not to jump ship already, the winners of free agency, Danny, so far here on August 6th, the Chicago Bulls. Are the Bulls going to be good again? I mean, it sure looks like it. They get Lonzo Ball in a sign-and-trade from New Orleans. They get Alex Caruso to come in on a four-year deal, which he got the bag. He got the bag. DeMar DeRozan then comes in on a three-year deal in a sign-and-trade. And they get Tony Bradley for some depth in at the center position. Their starting lineup looks like Zach LaVine, Lonzo Ball, Patrick Williams, Lauri Markkanen if he stays, maybe. Lonzo Ball, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Pat Williams, Nick Vucevic. Are we serious? I love this team. Chicago's winning free agency, and they've got guys off the bench like Caruso, Dosunmu, Kobe White, Lauri Markkanen if he stays, like I mentioned, Tony Bradley. All these guys. If you put a good coaching staff around these guys and this team, they have a very high ceiling, but I think they also have a very low floor. So where do you see, one, do you have a second round steal? I don't know if we really mentioned it. I know we talked about Sharif Cooper, but besides that, shifting in the free agency, what are your takeaways and who's won free agency so far?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of second round steals, I would definitely put Sharif Cooper up there for me. I mean, I know we mentioned him. I also like Luka Garza. I mean, I think he was one of those guys who was a powerhouse in college. And to go to Detroit, where you already just picked up Cade Cunningham, I mean, what else can you really ask for in a draft? I mean, you get easily far and away the most NBA-ready prospect. And then you get a giant guy to play in the middle, which, let's be honest, Detroit's had that MO for quite a long time, have a big, strong dude in the middle. But yeah, the pivot into free agency, I mean, it's hard not to say Chicago hasn't won free agency with all the moves that they've made. And I mean, obviously there are teams that have made more moves, but impactful moves with the team that they already had. I mean, when you talk about Zach LaVine, Nikola Vucevic, who I truly believe is one of the most underrated players in the NBA, I really do believe that. And then you get, you know, a young Kobe White there, and you've got a few guys. You've got a six man, you've got an easy 40 point a night type of guy, and you've got a 20 and 10 guy in his sleep. I mean, what can you do? What can you, you know, put around them to create a playoff contending team? And what do? But you get one of the best mid-range shooters in his day. I mean, who knows if his day has passed? We will obviously see this season if DeMar DeRozan has the same legs that he's had in the last few years. I mean, that's just the problem with DeMar. It seemed like he slowed down over the last few years. And that could be because he wasn't really on much of a contending team and he was waiting to be around a young unit like this. Lonzo is another one of those guys where he either looks fantastic or looks like you want to trade him immediately. And that's one of those players where in Chicago, is he going to be able to handle that type of pressure? Is he going to be able to handle coming in and being the starting point guard on a team that is a win now type of team? I mean, when you make these moves, it's win now. I mean, we know like an Alex Caruso type of guy, he fits into what they're going to expect him to do. He fits in perfect. Kobe White fits in perfect. Tony Bradley fits in perfect. But the guys who need to work well together, DeMar, Lonzo, you know, Vucevic, it's a strange combination of players. You know, I look at it, it's very slow. And that's one thing I think we're going to see on this team where I'm a little bit scared about Zach LaVine. Because Zach LaVine does not play slow. And I know Lonzo can run and in transition, but DeMar DeRozan plays slow. Nikola Vucevic plays incredibly slow. So it's a little bit of a mixture of transitional players versus, you know, give me the ball down in the post, let's run a play. So I'm interested to see, but that's one of those teams where I think, you know, you're going to see the first 25 games of the season. You're going to see things moving around. You're going to see different rotations, as it should be. If it's not, it's silly. I mean, they should spend the first third of the season just figuring it out, because obviously that's a team who, unless things go miraculously wrong, and miraculously wrong, I guess, is a bit of the wrong way to say it, but incredibly wrong, they're easily going to make the playoffs. I mean, the East, we know how the East looks at the bottom. They're going to make the playoffs. I see them coming in around the 5 or 6 seed in the East. I really do. I don't think much higher than that, because there was a lot of changes they needed to make. And obviously it'll take some time. But for me, you know, I don't know if you have anything to add on top of that, but for me, the team who I think as of right now is winning free agency. And it's weird for me to say, because it's not like the most overwhelming of moves, but I don't think they needed to make the most overwhelming of moves in the offseason, is Miami. Because I look at Miami, obviously getting Kyle Lowry is one of those guys where he's not my favorite player, right? But we know he's an effective player and he had a great season last year. I mean, he played well. Jimmy Butler's contract extension was a bit of a head scratcher for me. Maybe that's because I had the bad taste in my mouth of that playoff series against Milwaukee, where he looked like he was already in the Bahamas, and that never really goes well with me. Getting Duncan Robinson more years, picking up PJ Tucker's a great move. Obviously they've got Oladipo coming back, Markieff Morris off the bench, and you know, my favorite player, right, Tyler Hero. I don't think they needed to make a substantial amount of moves. I just think they had a bit of a weird year last year. Some injuries plagued them. You know, they obviously lost, you know, Kendrick Nunn off the bench and Dragic as well. But I think, you know, their team is set to do well in an East where you don't need to make a crazy amount of moves to be competitive. And I think those teams, Miami and Chicago, are going to be those teams in that 4-5 range where it's really a battle. Maybe they'll play each other first round and we'll be able to have this conversation of who really won free agency, right? Because whoever wins that first round, similar to an Atlanta Knicks series last year, and you know, they'll both, you know, whoever wins that series will go play a Brooklyn or something and get destroyed, and that is what it is. But I think it's between Chicago and Miami. I can't go wrong with Chicago, but right now I'm probably leaning towards, I think, Miami.
Breaks my heart that we don't have PJ Tucker anymore with the Bucks.
Yeah.
After his parade speech, after obliterating those bottles of champagne, was there anything better from that? I mean, I am personally basking in the glory of all of the picks of the Antetokounmpo family in Athens right now. Those are just makes me bring it. It almost brings a tear to my eyes. It's amazing. But I will say, to piggyback off what you said about the Bulls, I almost like that they have this kind of mixed blend of guys, and here's why. You mentioned that guys like LaVine, Lonzo, they like to run. Pat Williams is kind of a, you know, you can go back and forth. Also Charlotte guy, so shout out to him. And then you mentioned Nick Vucevic and DeMar DeRozan. But if a team that maybe runs all the time, right, and let's say that the defense that night is already set up in transition, they're, you know, playing it well, they have nothing to go to. Vice versa, team is just locked down in the half court offense. You can't really move. The only way to get out is run. But you have a lot of guys with brick feet. The Bulls have a chance now to mix it up. They could say, all right, tonight, you know, based on what we see, we're going to go quick. We're going to run this ball up the court. We're going to, you know, literally just almost those chest pass things with LaVine and Lonzo, and have DeMar DeRozan trailing, Nick Vucevic, Pat Williams helping out. And then you've got a, you know, night where maybe you say, you know what, let's take 20 seconds of the shot clock. Let's throw it into Vooch. Let's let him work on the block. Let's let DeRozan work mid-range. I love it. They've got versatility on offense, and not even just skill-wise, but in the game plan. They could literally play the traditional three guys out, two guys, one in the high post, one in the low post, or you could play four out and five and, you know, Nick Vucevic roaming inside, who can even step out on a pick and pop and hit a three. It's great to see. So Chicago's in the right direction, 1,000,000%. You mentioned the Heat. I love what the Heat have done. I don't want to sit there and bash. I think Kyle Lowry's overrated. I'm sorry. I think he is. And I think at his age, you know, they're squeezing the sponge here. They're getting everything they can out of this team. But in my eyes, like you mentioned, even if Miami somehow makes it out of the first round, that is their ceiling. I don't think they're going to go further than that. The bubble thing, not that it was a fluke. They took advantage of it. They did what the Bucks did this year. Took advantage of, you know, mismatches. They took advantage of injuries. Made the finals. Well, the Bucks, in their case, won the finals. So, haha. And two, Jimmy Butler is not going to – no. There's no way that – no. I don't see it. I'm shocked I haven't mentioned the Lakers yet. Because what the Lakers are doing, it's literally like, here's what I thought of, and I want to get your take. It's almost like playing 2K, playing my GM. You know, people say that, haha. But it's almost like you forget to sign your players, or you forget to realize, oh, these guys' contracts are up, or, oh, they're getting paid X amount of money. And now what they've done, they've signed Carmelo, Dwight Howard, Trevor Ariza, Malik Monk, Wayne Ellington, Kent Bazemore, Kendrick Nunn, and traded for Russell Westbrook. You see my fingers. 8 new players. The longest tenured Laker is LeBron James. 3 years. Go.
Yeah, honestly, I was surprised at how many moves they made. I had to be reminded by my guy Josh, my resident Lakers guy, because, you know, Lakers are his team. I'm like, how many guys did they have available? Like, how many spots were they available? He's like, there really was only like 3 guys that actually had contracts for the Lakers after the season was over. And now we're going to see probably the same thing right after next season. They're going to have another 4 guys wishing and washing through. There's not much to say about him. I mean, truthfully, like, I look at it and I want to be super excited. And I want to think, man, they've re-upped. They've brought in some moves. I mean, the big move was Westbrook. I mean, we knew that. That was a bit of a surprise. Obviously, there were murmurs, whispers around the league that maybe he could go there. But when you look at the rest of the pickups, it's like, okay, Dwight Howard, you know, they had Drummond. Is it that different? I don't know. Trevor Ariza, Carmelo Anthony, 2 very, you know, what do you say? Long in the tooth. They've been in the league for a while. They've been on a few teams. I'm not the biggest believer that either of them is going to be able to contribute a crazy amount. Malik Monk is a guy who, obviously, being in Charlotte, we've seen the polar response that he's brought. I mean, it's been, oh, this guy's got a lot of potential. Oh, this guy's trash. Oh, this guy's this. I never thought he was trash. I think he's a guy who just didn't have the right system in place. But, like, Wayne Ellington, like, what? I don't even remember. Where did Wayne Ellington come from? Where was he playing before? Like, seriously. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's only my deal. Kent Bazemore, obviously, as a Warriors guy, I like that pickup. I think he's a great second-level guy. Kendrick Nunn, I think, was a great guy to come off the second. And I think re-signing, you know, Horton Tucker. I think these are guys that are going to be their second unit. When you look at Carmelo, Trevor Ariza, Malik Monk, Wayne Ellington, I look at those guys and I'm thinking, how are they fitting into the rotation? That's my only worry, because you look at the Lakers team who won. You had, like, Jared Dudley, who never played, JaVale McGee, who played a few minutes, Dwight, who played a few minutes. You know, you had some of these guys who played a few minutes, but I'm wondering, like, is that what they're bringing in Wayne Ellington and Trevor Ariza to do? I mean, they need 3-and-D guys. I mean, Trevor Ariza is going to need to play. Kent Bazemore is going to need to play. Horton Tucker is going to need to play. But you want offense on the second unit. Okay, that's where I guess Nunn can come in. Ellington can come in. Monk can come in. But I'm just wondering, like, there's so many new guys. I understand so many of these guys took a minimum contract, so they're not expecting to get crazy amounts of minutes. They want to get a ring. But I look and I'm like, they literally reset the team. And I think this is going to look a whole lot like that team that won in the bubble. They're just figuring it out at the beginning of the season. Obviously, there was a massive break because of COVID, and then they came back. But I suspect this team looks a little bit like that. And what I do love the most about the Lakers is LeBron's mentality. Because when I saw LeBron tweet that thing, you know, keep that same energy, keep that same narrative, clearly he, in his mind, has a plan. And it's hard for me as an NBA fan to think LeBron didn't have, obviously, a hand in, like, every one of these pickups and some sort of thought, because he's been doing that for how long? He's been putting together lineups and saying, okay, let's see what we can do with this team. I don't look at this team and think, wow, this is a substantially better team than last year. I certainly don't think it's a substantially better team than the bubble team who won. So I'm just looking and I'm trying to put the pieces together in my head. I need to get out a notebook and a pencil and try and put together rotations. Because as of right now, you talk about my GM and forgetting to re-sign players. I'm thinking of when you're playing a season in 2K and you forget to substitute players out. And I'm thinking, who's going to be my money 5? And as I'm looking at the Lakers right now, I'm not even convinced I know who their money 5 is going to be. And that's a problem, because we talk about this all the time. You got to have a steady 8. No more than 8. And when it comes to the playoffs, I think it limits down to 7. And we saw that with Milwaukee. I mean, Milwaukee this year made every change that we said they should have made from the bubble season. And look what happened. They win a championship. When you can come up with that money 7, you can win. I mean, they picked up a money 7 in the offseason. So I don't really know what it's going to look like. I'm not hopping off no bandwagon, obviously. It's hard to hop off a LeBron bandwagon. But in my mind, I look at this team and I think, man, LeBron's going to be playing with a Rubik's Cube the whole year to try and figure out what's the best way to put this team together, because right now I'm not seeing it. And I'm being honest, you know, we look at Brooklyn last year, we were saying the same thing. How is it going to be put together? And it never got to that point where we felt comfortable with them using all the assets that they had in place. I feel as though we might have to feel that way with the Lakers this year.
I don't even know who their five is. I guess off the top of my head, Russ, Wayne Ellington, Ariza, LeBron, and AD. But then you're going to leave, I guess, technically put LeBron.
I could see Horton Tucker playing instead of Ariza, right, maybe. Right.
Taylor Horton Tucker, maybe Carmelo Ariza on some nights, which just makes you, as a basketball
I don't know, fan, man.
Like, this is great. You know, this is fun. But as a Lakers fan, or as maybe more of a deeper fan of the NBA like us, you're like, this is okay. But like LeBron said, I'll keep the same energy. I don't think this is going to work. I thought that what the Lakers had in terms of their core from this past year was fine. It was. The reason they lost in the first round was LeBron and AD being hurt. Their core was fine. It worked the year before, and they didn't get a chance to really run it back, which is kind of sad, honestly. But, hey, that's, you know, Rob Pelinka, do your thing. Jeannie Buss, whatever. But another move and another instance that I like, and a team that I think could make the playoffs in the East, close last year. Danny, they're right up the road from us. The Charlotte Hornets. I really like what they did getting Book Knight. And at the time, I thought, wow, now you're going to have James Book Knight, Devontae Graham, Terry Rozier, and LaMelo Ball all in one room. Now it's minus Devontae Graham. He got sent to New Orleans, and Charlotte actually got a first-round pick, lottery protected, which is pretty solid as a return, maybe some other guys as well. But the Hornets also picked up Kelly Oubre literally this morning or last night as I sent it to you. He said, I love this. I'm like, oh, well, you must be the puzzle to Woj or Shams, because that signing now happened, 2 years, 26 mil. I like Charlotte. I like Charlotte. Call me crazy. They're adding guys. I love that they got James Book Knight. I love LaMelo Ball, as we've always talked about. Miles Bridges, PJ Washington, now Kelly Oubre, some, you know, veteran experience. It's going to be fun. I'm very, very excited. But what are some other teams that you think may have not won free agency, but have done their part so far?
Yeah, first of all, you know, before I move into the two teams that I was thinking about that I figured people I wouldn't talk about, just because they're two teams we don't typically talk about too much, but I think they made some great moves in the offseason that I want to get through. But in terms of Charlotte, I think you're right. I think Charlotte's doing that slow burn, which I think is the best thing. You know, you've got young guys. You know, you've got guys who need to develop. Like you said, Melo and Bridges, we've seen that combination all year last year. It's beautiful. I think Book Knight, like I said, it was either him or Jalen Johnson for steal of the first round. I think he comes in and immediately contributes. And that was the worry, right? Oh, man, there's too many guards. Okay. I said to the group and the guys, you know, or with my Charlotte guys in our group chat, oh, they're thinking you're going to get rid of Rozier. I'm like, no. They're not getting as much for Rozier as they would for Devontae Graham. And Devontae Graham's loved in the city. I mean, he's just one of those guys who everybody likes. But you can get a lot more for him. And that's what happened. I think that just adds to that slow burn. You pick up Kelly Oubre. I think this is a perfect place for Kelly to get the most out of his game, because he's going to come in and be expected to put up points, put up numbers. He's going to be able to contribute. And it's a good city for him. I mean, I think going to the Bay from the Valley, now he's in the four. I mean, I don't know if that compares to the Valley or the Bay in terms of, you know, what you're doing after the games. And we know Kelly Oubre is one of those guys who's very involved in the community, fashion, all those types of things. But I mean, I think it's a perfect fit for him. So I'm with you. I think, you know, the Hornets get one of those bottom seven or eight spots in the playoffs for next year. And it's just a slow burn. I see in 3 or 4 years, the Hornets really put it together. They've got a good core, good nucleus of guys, but two teams. And I want to see who you think is more of a contender in their conference, because there's one in the West and there's one in the East. The East team is the Knicks. I mean, we look at the Knicks and we look at last year, the playoffs performance that they put in against Atlanta. I know you had picked them to win that series. I thought you were crazy, but you've seen that they've made a few moves. I mean, Julius Randle obviously gets the extension. They signed Kemba, which he's been one of those players the last few years. He hasn't really found his place, but we know, you know, being guys from Charlotte, Kemba can absolutely fill it up. If he finds the right system, he finds the right place, he can fill it up. Evan Fournier goes there, who is one of the MVPs of the Olympics right now. I mean, he's one of the most fun players to watch when he's playing well. I mean, we saw that when he was in Orlando. It's like sometimes they'd be horrible, and the one shining star would be Evan Fournier. Obviously, you're a big D-Rose guy. you know, I'm still sitting on the fence, but you get him for another 3 years for a bit of a steal. That works for me. Nerlens Noel, you needed some guys in the middle. You know, they re-signed the vet Taj Gibson and they re-signed Alex Burks. I mean, when you look at what they did in the offseason, it's crazy that nobody talks about them as much because we're talking about a four seed. I mean, we're not talking about like a nine team. I mean, we're talking about Charlotte. Like, oh man, now they're a contributor. This is the Knicks who are in the four spot in the East. Do I think they're going to get the four spot this year? Not necessarily. We'll see. But they kind of re-upped on what they did last season, and they picked up a few guys who I think are very underrated players in the league, in Kemba and Evan Fournier. So I'm expecting the Knicks to have an upgrade. Unfortunately, I think the rest of the East is also upgrading basically from top to bottom, and I think they're going to be down in that 6-7 range with Charlotte. But, I mean, I don't think we can really ignore them. And the other team, quickly before you get into the Knicks, is Utah, because we can't forget – Utah was at the top of the West. I mean, like, Utah was a team that we kind of giggled at. We'll believe it when we see it, yada, yada. And obviously they had some injury with Donovan Mitchell, and that dramatically affected them. But they didn't need that much, right? So they returned Mike Conley, who's hopefully going to be healthy. Rudy Gay, once again, another mid-range guy, similar to DeMar DeRozan. And if we're ranting about DeMar DeRozan in Chicago, we got to be a little bit ranting about Rudy Gay in Utah, who I think fits in well, plays slow. We know that Utah likes to play kind of methodical, a lot of Mitchell with Gobert. They signed Rudy Gay. They get a good backup center with Hassan Whiteside, more defense. He's basically a poor man's Rudy Gobert, sits in the middle, plays defense, throws his long arms around and tries to stop the ball. And one guy who I was very upset left the Warriors is Eric Paschal. And him getting picked up in Utah is a perfect fit. Him and D. Mitch are obviously friends since they were kids. You're going to have that immediate camaraderie. He's going to be put into that rotation. I think Utah this year, you know, if we're talking about, we'll believe it when we see it, they clearly are still in the win now. They didn't need to do much. They didn't need to change much. And they got a few guys to just kind of, you know, just nail in that identity that Utah has. And I think every pickup that they made and, you know, re-sign agrees with that, you know, just the way that they play. So I think looking at Utah in the West, they didn't really need to make that many moves, yet they still did. And I think the Knicks obviously knew they needed to get some extra help. They got some help. So out of those two teams, who do you think is making a bigger difference in their chances to win their conference?
Before I even answer that, crazy enough, I genuinely was thinking the exact two teams. I and again, it's no surprise. We do this a lot. I was sitting there with the Knicks and I said, you know, I thought exactly about what I said about my prediction. And I did it for a reason. I like the core. It's exciting. We had fans back in the arena. I factored that in. The Hawks then, of course, just obliterated my thought, which is fine. But they are running it back. They're bringing back Julius Randle, Rose, Noel, Burks, Taj Gibson. But then getting two guys that are on the fence, also former Celtics, Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier, it really shows that they can continue to add pieces like this. Maybe one of these guys are going to break through. You mentioned what Fournier's done in Tokyo. Could he break through? Could he have a great year here in New York? Who knows? But with the Jazz, I was looking through again all these teams, and again, you're running it back. You bring back Mike Conley. You, of course, still have Donovan Mitchell, still have Rudy Gobert. Then you get two proven guys in Rudy Gay and Hassan Whiteside, who have contributed at big points in their NBA careers. Then you get Eric Paschal in a trade where, like you said, almost looking around like John Travolta in that GIF, like, what's going on here? So the two teams, I think in terms of impact, it's Utah. It's more depth. It's more excitement, but it's hard not to pick the Knicks after what they did this year. It's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. And I mean, you look at Utah, right? Because they've still got a Joe Ingles. They've still got Jordan Clarkson as well. You know, I think that's a team where Utah immediately is back in the conversation to win the West. And let me tell you why. Because when you look at the West, it's like the Lakers completely re-upped. The Warriors are still on the comeback. I mean, you've got Phoenix, who I don't think got much better in free agency. I mean, they re-signed Chris Paul to a four-year deal, which means he's not going to play till he's 40, which I was saying from the start was ridiculous. They should have had him on one of them one-and-one deals. So now I think, if anything, Phoenix stays the same. I mean, it's not like they're getting much better, which obviously we saw how good they were last year. So I don't want to overlook that they weren't, like, competitive. Obviously, they were up in the NBA Finals to win. It's not like, you know, they weren't set up to win, but they didn't improve much, right? And then obviously the Clippers, Kawhi, we still kind of don't know what the heck is going on there. I mean, we'll see how they end up. and they haven't really made any other moves other than returning Nicholas Batum, who, God bless him, just stopped us, you know, not Australia, geez, Luka Doncic, and where's he from, Slovenia? Sorry, geez, so disrespectful to Luka, I'm sorry. You know, gives Luka Doncic his first international loss, but outside of that, I mean, what has Nicholas Batum, like, really contributed over the last few years? So the Clippers right now are kind of in purgatory. Like, what do we do now? What moves can we make? So we don't know with them. So Utah right there with those moves, I look at them and I think, is Denver going to be as good as them? I don't know, roster wise. Are the Warriors going to be as good as them roster wise? I don't know. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I just look at Utah, I think it's hard almost not to put Utah as the number one right now in the West. I mean, it really is hard. They look as to be the most proven longevity team, identity based team. So as of right now, I agree with you. I think Utah had the biggest impact. And I think going into the season, obviously, you got to look at Brooklyn. You know, they pick up Patty Mills, who I thought was going to come to the Warriors. Now, obviously, as a Warriors fan, I'm waiting on pins and needles about Iguodala, because if he goes to the Lakers or the Nets and does not come to the Warriors, that ruins what I'm thinking about with the Warriors. But obviously, the Warriors still have pieces to move. They moved Oubre. They still got Wiggins, Wiseman, picks to give up. I still think the Warriors end up getting a big player before it's all said and done. But as of right now, hard not to make Utah your favorite in the West.
Can't say I disagree with you. I think that they're doing exactly what teams at the top should do, and that's re-sign guys, that's bring back your core, add a couple pieces. It's exciting. I do think that, you know, we're going to see a lot more happen before the season comes back this fall. But for now, we're going to wrap things up and get out of here, because we have recapped so much that's happened in the last few weeks. I'm so happy. Basketball truly never stops. Any last words, Danny?
In fact, Donnie, I do have a few last words, and it's not my words. It's the words of one of the best players that's come across my viewership as an NBA fan, and that's Klay Thompson. Okay, so I was just scrolling through my Instagram today, and I see Klay Thompson on a lovely young man's TikTok feed, and I posted this on my Instagram story. So for those who did not see it, please go look. But Klay basically is in the Chipotle line with a random guy who makes a TikTok and clearly asks Klay, hey, can I make a TikTok with you in it? And Klay, being, you know, the most normal superstar that he is, it's like, yeah, no problem. And the guy basically said, hey, Klay, what's some advice you give for a young athlete or entrepreneur? And what does Klay say in the middle of a Chipotle line, in the middle of the afternoon during the summer? But my advice would be yourself. Be patient, because it's a marathon, not a sprint. Be original. Stick to your core values. Don't measure your success based on what other people do. Everyone is at their own pace. It's not about material things. It's about inner peace and doing something you're passionate about. Klay Thompson, as thoughtful as he is, gives such an unbelievable answer. Like I said, in the middle of a weekday afternoon in a Chipotle line waiting for a burrito bowl, how can you not love Klay Thompson? I mean, if you don't love Klay Thompson, you're not a real NBA fan. You can't. All he does is drop wisdom like this and ride his boat with his dog. I mean, what, you can't ask for more from a superstar. I thought that was great. I had to share that with you and with our listeners, because I thought that was some very valuable advice.
In a Chipotle line.
Makes it the best
quote you could ever get. I can't close on anything else other than that. So that is Danny B. This is Donnie C. signing off. Another episode of Kicking It with Danny and Donnie in the books. Have a great Friday.